All right, so good morning, everyone. I'm going to call to order the Health Committee meeting for the Board of Supervisors for Monday, July 14th. Clerk, check, take the roll.
Supervisor Tam?
Present.
Supervisor Miley?
Present. And do you have any instructions you need to provide?
For in-person participation, the meeting site is open to the public. If you'd like to speak on an item, you can fill out a speaker's card in the front of the room and hand it to the clerk. For remote participation, use the raise your hand function and follow the teleconferencing guidelines posted at www.acgov.org.
Okay, thank you. All right, so we have one informational item this morning, the African American Wellness Hub update.
Good morning, Chair Miley, Supervisor Tam. My name is Dr. Karen Tribble, I'm Behavioral Health Director, so we're very pleased to be able to provide this update in collaboration with our GSA colleagues and the agency director. The context that I just briefly wanted to provide is that this is a multi-year invested endeavor that has been invested in by the county, and your board has been incredibly supportive. In absentia, we also want to recognize Supervisor Carson for his years of service and dedication and active engagement over the last decade or so since we've been working with this project. And so what we hope you will hear today is not only an update, but context in terms of why we started this project, what led to it, some of the data. Even most recently, we've released information relative to full service partnerships with the highest level of service in our county. And even that is saying 45% of those recipients are individuals of African American and Black descent. And so this is just a culmination of effort that is related to data, related to need, and some of the outcomes. So with that, I will defer to our Division Director and Health Equity Officer, Stephanie Montgomery, and then I'll return in some elements of the project to participate and provide more updates. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Tribble. Good morning, everyone. I'm just here to provide you this update today. So we're gonna go over the overview. Next slide, please. Again, this is about aligning some of the data, some of the community feedback we've had over, I think, maybe 10, 20 years, and aligning that with our public health department, our behavioral health department services, and the things that we do for all of our community members. Next slide, please. The African American Wellness Hub, the context, as you can see here, we're just outlining our client population based on fiscal year 22-23, and we serve everyone who comes who is eligible for our services. So we want to provide, as we said again, quality services to everyone. But as you can see, some of our populations are quite large, and the African American population is at 32% for our mental health services and at 22% in our SUD services. And we say we want to make sure that we're providing culturally linguistic appropriate services for everyone who comes into behavioral health department. The emphasis of this project is to expand the capacity to deliver, create, and incorporate influence systems of healing devoted to the restoration of the African American wellness that connect them to culturally affirming programs and practices. The hub will serve as a focal point designed to preserve and actualize the core understanding and best practices of African American people with a focus on wellness. The goal is to include direct services across the county, so CBO partners across our agency. So we'll have some public health, social services, referrals to primary medical care, and or housing. And right now, Alameda County Behavioral Health Department has dedicated over $19 million to this project. We have secured a building and are working on having that building up and ready to go by 2027. So this is the hub vision, philosophy, and structural design. Again, it's multifaceted. It's multidimensional. African-American Holistic Wellness Club complex. It's a paradigm shift to culturally grounded services and programming. It's community-driven, need-based, pragmatic, and respectful services with community-based investments. It's co-designed operations and multiple organizations, partners beyond the county. They have helped to inform the policy with opportunities to evaluate culturally affirming and relevant practices, not only evidence-based practices, but also promising practices. Our engagement so far, we've had way more than this, but we had a series of 14 community focus groups, key informant interviews, over 176 community members surveyed, 6 national site visitations, 9 commissioned thematic scholar practitioner papers, and cataloged 327 best ideas and 401 best practices. So this has been well researched. Next slide, please. We have a promotional video that we'd like for you to see.
Americans, particularly now. Many years ago, we did commission and completed the African American Utilization Report. But what that document helped to reveal to the community and to us concretely, what we all knew was that African Americans, particularly in Alameda County, are served, well, certainly, but are overly served and are overly represented in many different service modalities, whether it's diagnostically, the numbers of individuals incarcerated, and the individuals that are relegated to treatment that's long term. And so that was coined inappropriately, sir.
We need to establish the idea and the philosophy of the restoration of wellness for the African American community without compromise.
There are no urban area where there was a large, significant black population had ever took time to look at how African Americans utilize the different health services and especially mental health and substance abuse services.
It was never an integrated African American service center.
Started with community outreach, coming to the county, coming to behavioral health care from the community, saying this population is underserved.
We spent a lot of time as the county listening to people first and foremost. Dr. Wade Nobles and the members of the African American mental health groups.
Many different people and experts and voices contributed, but I think I have to give honor to essentially the African American Steering Committee. And through the support and leadership primarily of Dr. Nobles, Dr. Boyles, and Dr. Goddard.
We looked at those organizations that were providing services to the African American community. It was never culturally congruent, responsive services that were being provided.
The whole idea of having the hub comes out of decades and decades of inequities. It's high time that we recognize the African American community in a intersectional way, in the ways that they need to be supported and upheld in their mental health and well-being.
The idea of having a hub, an edifice, a building that reeks with the idea of wellness, that the presence of it alone is going to be helpful in the restoration of wellness.
An actual building that is inspiring.
Having an official location that everyone knows you can go to for to meet and approach all of your issues and challenges around mental wellness, I think is critical.
The barriers of access to understand why the social determinants of health are important. So this is a place where hopefully all those things can be addressed.
But when we start talking about mental health and behavioral health for African-American community, the one thing that cannot be compromised is the utilization of the science of black psychology. And the other thing that cannot be compromised is a look at how you apply the best thinking of the wisdom traditions out of our culture. Alameda County really is going to be able to stand up and say to the whole nation, here's how it should be done.
This hub is going to be a unique program and service that's not duplicated anywhere.
So I'm particularly excited about the ways in which the African American Wellness Hub will speak to the depth and breadth of our experiences as African Americans. You know, we are not a monolith. Within the African American community, there is so much diversity and different types of lived experiences. And to have an environment that speaks to that intersectionality, you know, the ranges in which we love and our relationships and our faith perspectives, I really look forward to seeing the ways in which all of that is reflected back to us and celebrated.
I see an oasis. And I walk into that oasis and I take a cool drink of water. That's what the hub's gonna be in 2024. It's gonna be an oasis where we can walk in and take a cool drink of restorative water.
It is an important task and well overdue to the African American and the Black community.
Thank you. So as you can see in the video, that was our aspirational goals for the project. And I think what I just want to underscore as we move through the remaining aspects of the presentation is that certainly we are committed and to continue to be committed to providing services ethnically respectful, relevant services across the board. And this will help us, we believe, do something different. One thing that is not in the slides, what I wanted to acknowledge, what this is not is just a building that serves only Black people. The goal is obviously to do it in a way that's culturally affirming and that it's based on research. And so that you heard earlier from Director Montgomery, the research that was created. And so we are very proud to have opportunities to be in partnership. City of Berkeley, Contra Costa, or others are trying to emulate this. And the difference I think that you will see once and as we continue to move further with this project is that the actual ways in which the modalities are provided, the services are provided differently, and we're hoping that the actual concrete way that the community is voicing an experience is replicated in a very different way. So it's much more novel. We're very pleased, and you'll hear from them, so we will defer to GSA Director here to speak on it. But for context, we were very thankful that your board approved on November 10th, 2020, the actual project to be added to their capital improvement project. So that really memorialized the county's investment in your and support for that. You also approved on June 27, 2023, the actual purchase of real property. And again, we'll defer to the details in terms of that. There are many different programmatic oversight and scopes, and you also approved that on January of 2024. We're very pleased later that year, you also approved Vanir Construction Management, and I'm sure Ms. Gassaway will talk a little bit about what that looks like in terms of actually constructing and garnering community feedback into the construction. And that also is something Alameda can be proud about, that is a unique way to not only dedicate a site, but also to have community involvement and expertise that actually looks at what type of building and the way that it is constructed can be affirming to a particular population. GSA will continue to play a critical role in that work. And as we were structured and we've been saving for many years, as I mentioned, over a decade for the work that we knew we would have to dedicate, we transferred to make sure that that is secure to our GSA Capital Projects funds. Next slide. The critical partnerships that you've seen, obviously, you saw some of the leaders in the community that have been working through the county and the partnerships, General Services Agency, of course, our entire board, we're very pleased that we saw you all participate in the acknowledgement of the program, including Supervisor Tam, although Districts 5 and 4 are mentioned here, and Supervisor Miley for his support as well in convening many of the partners and organizations that also are of like mind. AC Health and other agencies within our county have been at the table with us and in partnership, and many different community-based organizations and stakeholders. What I want to underscore is we're also, the feedback that we receive is sometimes critical feedback to make sure that even the report that was written, which is very complex and research heavy, materializes into something that operationalizes what they have said. And you'll see as we move forward that there are more specific things that they ask to be present in the facility. Next slide. When we created the Office of Health Equity, again, it was a very important division that we created. We made sure that the integration of this work rests there, and you've met Stephanie Montgomery. These are the types of services that are there, so you can see already there's an alignment with the work that is will go through the hub and that will continue throughout the project. Next slide. This is a timeline. I won't go through each piece, but we wanted to memorialize the commission of the African American Utilization Study that we did back in 2008. We had a prior ethnic services manager at that time, very prominent in the community, who helped to do that work. And we looked at the data trends that we saw in the community. And this really informed that we had to make a different pivot. And we couldn't say that we serve African American people in a way that was indicative of positive outcomes, because we continued to see over reincarceration rates, we continue to see higher numbers of diagnostic criteria, i.e. schizophrenia and things like that, as compared to the typical population, and even when you compare us to other counties. In 2011, that utilization study was completed, and we eventually at that point, and you heard former Supervisor Carson mention the African American Steering Committee, we created that in our department. And their goal was to provide feedback, critical feedback in some ways, affirming feedback, and how the services should be allocated and what it should look like. Out of that, they recommended many different things, including the dedication of $2 million annually in our budget. So that seems like a large amount, but it actually is was a minor piloted start for them to have influence on how we spent specifically $2 million every year for the African-American community. And those projects then had outcomes and measurements and ways to look at whether there has been impact. And so we're really grateful for the work of that community group. As well as between 2012 and 14, as a result of that work, many different innovative programs were launched through MHSA. They funded those programs, many of which ideas came upon, and we were able to look at those impacts. And then in 2015, based on the advocacy, again, District 5 was very active in that, we commissioned a very concrete report, which is what was highlighted back in the earlier slides by Director Montgomery. And that report, our goal was to make sure that there was much engagement from the community and feedback and research. And as you saw, that hundreds of individuals were used, methodologies were not just county specific and statewide, they were national. And in 2017, when the report was completed, we then launched, in alignment with our health equity division in 2020, the work that continues to sponsor these activities. Next slide. Some of the work, obviously, we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that there are things happening in the background that are changing Medicaid, that are impacting beneficiary requirements, and so we are well aware that they will also drive and to some degree impact how we deliver the services and what we do within the hub. So we wanted to acknowledge that. Although CalAIM, to which your board is familiar with, does promote healthcare and coordination, we also know, based on some of the federal changes, the larger numbers of Medi-Cal eligible clients who make up some proportion, not all, of African Americans will be impacted by that. So we're looking at what that could be for the data to make sure that we compensate as we get nearer to project completion. Obviously, you know, I won't spend time, but MHSA changing, BHSA, those restrictions and changes, and all of these change to some degree post-date the idea and the zeitgeist behind the development of the African American Wellness Hub. But nevertheless, these are new legislative changes, including Care Court, SB 43, how people are placed on psychiatric holds, the criteria. As you saw in the prior slide, Stephanie Montgomery mentioned, about 37% of individuals who are in the African American communities consuming services that are substance use are part of our department care delivery system, which is pretty significant. And you'll see the shift from the mental health side to substance use. So we presume that Senate Bill SB 43, who will allow more individuals to receive treatment through as a result of a substance use disorder, might also have more impact in the African American community and have more opportunities for utilization. So we're thinking about how all of these intersect. And as you know, opioid planning, the BCHIP sites, $170 million that were coming to the county that we worked in partnership with those providers and created those applications. And we're thankful that they were successful. All of this work, including our required changes, will be impacting what ultimately lives within the hub. And what we're hoping for is to use Dr. Noble's, this is a spoke and a wheel, so we don't presume that this will be the end-all, be-all, one centralized location. What we hope is to create opportunities, which we've already begun planning, at other sites that will feed into this, very much like a wheel. Next slide. The most recent opportunities for listening and engagement, so as you saw in the initial slides, that was how we started. Very robust, and as Director Montgomery mentioned, there's been many to date as well. The most recent ones occurred in May and June, and August is pending as well. So our goal is throughout the project phases, we're trying to track on community and board direction and action and feedback to make sure we're as holistic as possible, and we continue to ongoing engagement with those partners. On the right, you'll also see a new name. We've engaged Footprint Consulting Group. They've been charged to help us with the listening sessions to continue through the life of the project. And so we thank you for the support and the work as far as your board as well. Next slide. I won't list all of them, as you can see. These were the themes of those listening sessions that came up. Psychiatric support and clinic and medication support is something that we do across the board, but the goal of that feedback that we heard was to really engage our families and community members and to provide culturally dedicated and centered treatment in terms of that. As you saw, Dr. Angela Coombs is the associate medical director in our department, and she has led the concurrent activities that we've been sponsoring for the last several years to actually bring in those that are trained in psychiatry, but also those that know some of the cultural impacts and some of the untoward effects of not appropriately having medications appropriate to a particular population, including in the African-American community. So we've been spearheading those works. So these are other themes that came up that the community have asked us to target to make sure that we uplift. And so this is definitely part of our planning and this work as we will continue to move forward. And next slide. And finally, before I hand it over to Director of our GSA, Kimberly Gassaway, to land in terms of where we are, this is, as you heard or saw in the video, the ABCI, which was born and raised here in Oakland, actually was created, and you saw the founding member, Dr. Nobles, have also started a training through which we have partnered with them. And so they have been in the last several years, again, this is all concurrent to the construction and the work we've been doing, have been training other providers in the community to provide more culturally congruent and appropriate services that we're hoping will improve the outcomes that we've been seeing in Alameda County. We have numerous programs now in our MHSA plan through, of course, GS through 2026, knowing that BHSA will be transitioning, but we've been trying to leverage as much opportunity to gain, continuing the momentum over the last several years. We also have stood up several different types of programs and funding sources. You've seen some of our opioid settlement updates. Some of those projects and programs will target individuals who are from this community, who we also hope will have and create a natural nexus point and referral point for this project. So our goal is to continue to do this work, to continue to partner with GSA, who's been a fantastic partner in weathering some of the storms that we've learned about in construction, and we look forward to that continued work. So with that, I will defer to her, although I think she is, okay, thank you. I was hoping she was still here. Director Kimberly Gassaway.
Thank you, Dr. Treville. Kimberly Gassaway, Director of General Services Agency. Good morning. So before I dive into some of this, I just want to say this is probably my favorite project. We're pretty proud to be partnering with Behavioral Health Services on this and also the community leaders that I've had the opportunity to meet and engage with. So With that, I'll give you a little update on where we are for delivering the facility. So Dr. Tribble already spoke about the background from 2014 to where we are now. And so in 2020, we had permission to pursue the project and start looking for facilities. And in 2021, Behavioral Health set aside the largest tranche of the funding of $19 million set aside and designated specifically for the project. In 2022, we did find a site. After touring many locations, our staff went with Behavioral Health and community members to purchase the Martin Luther King site, and we began capital planning, site visits, and assessment of the facility. And then from April through June 2023, we received information from all their listening sessions and the community input and took that report to get an idea of what the facility should look like to incorporate that feedback that was posted on the procurement for the design build entity. June 2023, the site purchase was initiated with authorization from your board. It took a little while. Some of you may remember there was a sign we couldn't get taken down, but so it took us a while to close that building, but it did happen. Supervisor Carson also helped us make that happen. So May 2024, we acquired the building. Next slide. So this was the building. It's very beautiful, and when you go inside and from first glance, it looks like the right met the community needs. And then we went in and started assessing it. It is a 15,000 square foot building on less than a tenth of an acre. It's an office ground floor retail. It has three stories, attic, full basement. We came in with a full facility assessment and professional cost construction cost estimators and determined that it would be much more cost effective and you would end up with a brand new, better product if we rose a new building and took this building down, unfortunately. Next slide. This gives you a sense of where it's located in within District 5, right there in the heart. Social services building is right down the street. There's a lot going on. It's near the freeway. There's parking stalls close by on the other side of Fox Theaters on the other side, not too far from BART. Next slide. And this is an aerial view of the location as it, in relation to where it is in the entire downtown Oakland. So then we started the procurement of the Progressive Design Build entity. I mentioned that another at the procurement committee, Progressive Design Build is new for GSA. We've been implementing it. It's pretty well known now in the state as the newest, fastest way to bring projects forward. The way it works is you, in traditional design build, which we've done a number of successful projects, you bring in first a bridging architect who does a lot of the background design, and then you take those documents and put it out to bid to get a design build entity. The challenge is that then the actual designer who's going to finish the project is coming in with a product already developed, and they almost start over. So that whole first 4 to 6 months, sometimes a year, this method, progressive design build, you bring the architect and the design and the builder in together at the beginning, and they do the entire design from the beginning, and so you don't lose that front end time. So we did post the RFQ for the design build entity on June 1st of this year. Pre-qualifications and a proposal meeting was held. There was a site visit. A large number of people turned out. We were pretty excited to see that, a number of builders and designers. It's a lot of buzz on this project. On June 27th, we did show them our budgeted cost plan that was prepared by our cost estimator. So they have a sense of why we think we know how much it'll cost to build the building. The submittals are due July 29th, and then we will have the evaluation and interview process. There's about three or four different panels. They'll be looking at different criteria, such as their expertise in progressive design build, having done projects of this type, their understanding of what the community is looking for in the facility. And so then the evaluation interview, once they're done, we'll do all the scoring and make our recommendations. There is a protest period, and we expect to bring approval of award to the board in October. This includes demo and construction of a brand new building. It'll be larger, 17,500 square feet is our estimate. The cost of design and construction without soft costs is roughly $23 million, and the schedule is about 24 months. Next slide. We did early on, I think this is important, GSA, we've started implementing this as a best practice to help us with governance, and we used the African American Wellness Hub as our first project where we really mapped this out so everyone understands what we call chain of command and decision making. Who talks to who? Because oftentimes in our project, we have 10 people talking to 10 different people. So you have your board of supervisors with external and internal stakeholders maybe speaking to you, but the board down to the CAO. And then you have healthcare, behavioral healthcare with Anika Chowdhury, the director, interim director, and Dr. Tribble as the leaders in GSA. That's myself and my chief deputy, Alan Baxter. And then we go down in the green for healthcare. These are the different divisions. Their behavioral health program, their operational team lead is Stephanie. She's been very engaged with our people. And our capital programs team is Keith Rowan. He's the deputy director. And that's his staff, Regina and Nivi, who are running the project. In the blue color is Vanner. That's the CMPM construction project manager. They put together all the bid documents for us and the schedule. They looked at our cost estimate also, and they will be on the project throughout to make sure it's delivered correctly. And right now we're procuring DBE, design build entity, is in the blue. So those are the companies that will be delivering the project. And with that, we're happy to take questions.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the presentation and the update. I know I have a number of questions, comments, but before I start, I want to see if Supervisor Tam has any questions and or comments.
Thank you, Chair Miley, and thank you very much for the presentation and the progress report. Clearly, during my time on the Health Committee, every health equity study shows the disparity and the much-needed services that the African American Wellness Center will provide. I just have a few questions, mainly trying to understand and appreciate, as you mentioned, the African-American community, like all the other ethnic communities, are not monolith. You know, I certainly have a great appreciation for the diversity and the backgrounds and the generation of people that are here. In terms of, like, the services that they are currently receiving, at least since the over the 13 years when the MHSA, the $2 million was in place, has it been in several different areas? And then this seems like a navigation center where you,
yes,
you kind of do placements on housing, workforce development, reentry support. So how is that going to work in terms of, like, coordination among all the various services that we provide?
Yes, very intuitive question. It's that, and we will be designating it as an actual site for the provision of services. And that also impacted the building that we can select, and we looked for areas across the county, obviously, that had the highest number of individuals that we thought could access the services. What we hope is that it'll be a shared site. So we could have, for example, I don't want to speak for Director Tartt, for example, but it could be our public health partners will be stationed there. We could also allow for our social services agency to be stationed there. We're also, and some of those projects that we have been seeding already are around navigation, coordination, referrals, linkage, work, discharge planning. So there's already a lot of works that are happening. And we're looking at some of our providers who provide actual services, whether they be psychiatry, therapy, counseling, are also those piloted sites that I mentioned before who are undergoing the trainings that are having that are happening underway. So we're looking at training their clinical staff as well as interns and having internships that are actually being populated now. So our hope is that a person will come in and maybe they'll need a shower and housing services. So we'll have some of our partners that could be through AC Health, that could even be any other community partner that is willing to provide that. What we heard loud and clear from our stakeholders as well is that historically, as you can imagine, you can't necessarily fund faith-based work. And so yet they felt that they were in some ways disconnected from some of the faith-based institutions. And so some of the MHSA have been funding, have enabled some faith-based organizations to begin to provide counseling and outreach and treatment engagement. And so we could link them back to their own communities in the way that they'd like to be supported. So it'll be a both and, a navigation center. We also hope that those folks that are there, including our staff and some of our team members, including those in the Health Equity Division, will be there to warm handoffs, to actually provide services. There could be transportation. So literally we're hoping that it truly will be a holistic center where you don't have to worry about us working with you to figure out what you need. We are able to connect you and not let go of you until you find the support that you need. So that's what we're looking at, and including housing and, education, employment. And that was a big theme as well, that folks felt, particularly those were incarcerated and discharged, didn't feel that they had employment opportunities. So we have an entire employment division, so it could be that. It could be that's all you really need to make sure that your mental health stays stable. So it's a both and.
I appreciate that explanation. I was trying to, in my mind, because I work with a lot of the people with roots on the Alliance, and so I was trying to understand the differentiation, because it sounds like it's a referral. And I'm trying to understand the cultural competency element that gets into this referrals and the healing, the treatment process.
Absolutely. So one of the training protocols, for example, that we mentioned, ABSI and others now are embodying, this traditional referral is you come in or you're called, you tell, quote, all your business, and then hopefully you get connected. What we're finding is that within the African-American community, that's not helpful. Not only do they prefer not to share in that way, but there's an element of trust and distrust that occurs, just standard. So besides the attempts to match with people who look like them, in the absence of that, it's actually, what do you need at a very pragmatic level? How can we support you? Because what we're hearing from them is you need to show us that you're a trusted organization and individual before you make the referral, or we won't follow up. And so those lack of follow-up and the recidivism is less due to the quality of service, perhaps, but it's because the modality, the way that they're approached, is not culturally respectful. There is also evidence that, for example, family members may be comprised of different individuals. You may have not extended family members that are just as important as a nuclear family. But in our practice, for example, we need a legal guardian or a parent to sign. And the parent may not be able to do that for a lot of reasons. And so a grandparent is just as worthwhile. So it's actually the how that are changing, as well as having opportunities. And we have some programs that we've been modeling through MHSA and pilot programs, Black Men Speak, music, a lot of different areas. We just hosted a wellness event a few weeks ago where we had individuals through dance interpreted, and that was something that they felt that was a step forward to helping people feel affirmed and welcome. Colors, dress, everything, the way that the building is created and the way that people are communicated with made a huge difference. And so those are the type of kind of abstract things, as well as, I won't go into huge specific, but a huge paradigm shift. And you'll hear that particularly with Dr. Nobles and speaking about it, because their traditional, quote, Western model with I and others were trained in psychology and medicine and things like that is deficit-based. So show us your issue, and then we'll treat the issue, as opposed to how can we make your environment better? How can we lean on the strengths that you already have? That is not quite the way that, for example, payment is reimbursed. It is reimbursed based on how the pathology or the challenge, and that was a turnoff, again, to many of the African-American communities. You felt as though you had to be at your worst-case scenario in order to get serious, and they didn't want the stigma of holding that. Given the disparities that they experience. So those are some of the examples that so I'm not sure if that answered your question, but.
Thank you. Last question is, so under Prop 1, there was obviously a shift away from prevention dollars, and since, I guess, over the last 13 years, the $2 million came from the MHSA. So is it going to shift with going to BHSA? Will we still have that $2 million?
Wonderful question. So we will have to shift because, again, now there's no more prevention. So we're evaluating those current providers, obviously, that did provide the ethnic-based services, some of which you've heard from UALP providers, and not just those that provide linguistic difference, but some of them were from the African-American community. So we're working with some of them to either find partner organizations that can provide the treatment. As I mentioned, psychiatry. There may be I'm making this up as we speak just to make the point, but there may be a need to actually provide psychiatric services, for example, to incarcerated Black men to prevent them from incarcerating. That could have been a prevention program that we had, and now that organization potentially can partner with an existing clinical provider who's already providing treatment. You mentioned Roots, for example. We're looking at ways to augment some of the services that could be adjacent with them. But yes, there's going to be a huge shift. The $2 million is something that the county committed to making available. So it may be that the $2 million can't pay for services as they did before, but we're still dedicating those dollars. That won't change because we made the commitment to make sure that at least $2 million will have community feedback in terms of how it is delivered across the board. So,
obviously a navigation center takes funding to sustain itself.
That's right.
To be operational. So the $2 million you're saying goes to these service providers, but over time, will we have sufficient funding to support and sustain the center?
Yes. So the $2 million need not limit what can be funded through the African American Wellness Hub, for example. That was just a picture of services that we got and we get consistent feedback from about how they're doing, whether they're doing well, and we get some ideas. Creating an ombudsman, the program Shekla, for example, was born we had a housing division previously, and we brought them in, and we created a model that was a land trust for the county, and so that was some of those works. So it's kind of like seed money. The ongoing operations are in the larger part of our budget. And so once those innovative programs started, we converted many of them to permanent programs. And so those funding sources will continue, albeit they will shift, as you've mentioned with BHSA, closer to the treatment program. So for us, we will have to rely even more heavily on some of our providers who provide mild to moderate or who can do wellness work more so than I think we envisioned before. But it doesn't mean just because you go into the building, it has to be behavioral health treatment you must get. It is anything you need, theoretically, we want to have partnerships. So I hope that makes sense. So the $2 million could be connected, but it doesn't have to be. It's the rest of our budget.
Thank you.
All right. First of all, Kimberly, you can go sit down. And we'll have questions of you, but you can take the questions from that vantage point. Thanks for the update. I really support the hub, the wellness hub. Been supporting it since 2000. When I arrived here, when Gigi Crowder was working on this, I know Gigi is in Contra Costa County. I see her periodically. In fact, I think she was at an event with Tony, my significant other, just a week ago. So I hope between Gigi and Supervisor Carson, I generally kind of let them, just kind of usurp this whole area. And I've been more or less just part of the team. Everybody can't be the leader of the team. Everybody can't be the quarterback. And I've just kind of been, in the background, but definitely supportive of this. And now with Supervisor Carson no longer here, Dr. Tribble, I've said to you and Stephanie, I want to make sure you very qualified professionals with the help of our other leaders from the community drive this across the finish line. It's been a long journey, and I'm just very thankful that people have been very steadfast and stuck with this, and I can't wait until 2027 when this opens and then becomes operational and we can begin to see some of the benefits. Now, it is my understanding that in the meantime, you are working on things to try to address the concerns in the African-American community even before we get the building and get the services there. So if you could speak to that initially, then like I said, I've got more questions.
Absolutely, and thank you. Thank you for your tireless support. And yes, I've seen, I think in an event we were at together, Gigi Carter as well has been a starch advocate. What impacted us, quite frankly, also was COVID. So we started to call them virtual services because we didn't want COVID and the shutdown to impede our project while working and accumulating the funds to do the work. So some of those projects, as I mentioned before, are the training programs. Some of them are actually groups that provide, I mentioned Black Men Speak. We're also working on PET Project and some other programs that are working with the Black community around service delivery. We've also uplifted, again, as I mentioned, the intersections between the faith community. We brought in more providers or community members of the faith community who also want to work and support the needs of in a wellness way. Some of the things we've increased, as you know, Roots does a huge amount of footprint and work at Santa Rita Jail, so we worked in that space. We've also looked at West Oakland Health, done some work around healthcare delivery, and as well as some of our, each of our federally qualified health centers have been part of a process that we do. I always forget the acronym, but it's literally called PCPCP. Essentially, it means our psychiatric team provides consultation to primary care providers and work. And we have brought in either national speakers around the Black psychiatry, and so teaching them specific modalities that can be better influenced in work. And we also have, who I think Director Montgomery can probably speak to, a family dialogue group that is centered around Black information and Black individuals. So that work consistently provides feedback. They host trainings as well, and we funded those projects. So those are some of the projects that we've continued and initiated through this work.
Very good. Very impressive. That's really good to hear all of that because I know, I've gone to a couple of meetings, but I know there was a concern about while we're waiting for this building and services to be provided, what are we doing in the interim? So we can't, and just hearing some of these things you've outlined, it's very, very impressive. So keep that up. And the other questions I have, I'm very interested in the operational model. Programmatic model. I think you were talking a little bit about that with Supervisor Tam. Clearly, Stephanie pointed out, best practices, 400, 300, et cetera. Far be it, I'm just a supervisor. I only have my life experience, and I don't want to, put my life experience in kind of impression upon what should happen there. So you can you talk a little bit about how that the operational model will take place?
Absolutely. And I have to acknowledge, for example, former Ethics Services Manager Gigi Crowder initially, her work helped to spearhead the utilization study. And then we had Havari Wilson was the Ethics Services Manager. And now we have Dr. Clyde Lewis, who is our Ethics Services Administrator. And I mention that because some of the work that we have had to undertake came when the initial utilization report was created. I have to acknowledge the goal of the community, or at least the report initially, was that it would not necessarily be county-owned. The hope was, for example, maybe we could broker and purchase a building for an entity to own. As you know, there's history there that some of those projects have been complicated, and there is some nexus to having county investment, not only to have it in perpetuity exist, but we also felt that it was important that the county take ownership, and I don't mean that literally, I mean figuratively, accountability for making sure the services continue to do well. The model that was proposed initially, again, our prior Ethics Services Manager was here at the time, talked about, again, having almost an ombudsman type where there is maybe not a CEO, but like a director that's community funded and that is based on a particular organization overseeing the work, like a manager. I'll take ownership. I elected to not do that necessarily because, as you know, we have procurement requirements, and that would require that we sole source and invest only in one entity. And I made the decision believing that truly the more entities that are trained and that actually have an investment and provide either funding or resource to this, the more likely to be sustained. Because we have seen different models in not just Alameda County and other places where you have one program that does it, and if there's any issue or challenge in that program, for whatever reason is sustainable and successful, it dies. So we wanted to make sure that doesn't exist. So we will, as a behavioral health department, own the maintenance, the ongoing fees, the work with GSA, any of the construction, that will be a county investment in project capital. Now, and we will hold a bulk of the behavioral health, clearly, services that are provided there or the coordination, anything that our department funds. And the program model will be that there will be county providers as well that are there or county contracts. And ultimately, we hope to have a very open, we haven't had the concrete discussion yet because the building hasn't yet come, but we hope that African American Steering Committee could have presentations to them. What's happening, how things are going, because again, their feedback and advocacy to us really helps shape it. So in that way, that's kind of as close as we can get to really having community oversight to it. Maybe not a full board, maybe not a separate entity, a nonprofit to create, but it's something where the community can always have the opportunity to have a pulse on what's being provided. So that's ultimately, we hope, we will remain principal, obviously, to caretake the property, to be responsible, but the community has opportunity to hear and weigh in through the African American Steering Committee.
Oh, that's great, because I trust you and Stephanie for sure.
Yes.
Work with Dr. Nobles and the other doctors to figure this out. And, you know, both Daryl Stewart and Bert Jones are African American males. And I know I've asked them both to kind of track this and to be involved and represent me. So I do trust that you'll figure all this out and make it work. And if we have to make some course corrections this and the other week, we'll do that. Because it was said in the presentation, there's no model like this in the country.
No. And again, we're honored to have other neighboring counties say we have one too, but it's not quite the same. In terms of how we're doing it here in Alameda. So this is all new territory for many people.
Okay. And then a few more questions and maybe comments. When I looked at the African American Wellness Hub themes that were identified, family engagement and navigation programs, I think that's extremely important. And once again, I'm just going to go on my own life experience and my own work in the community over the last, I don't know, 50 years or so. It just seems to me, whatever family is, whether it's a single parent family, it's just important to have that that peace there. Because I think a lot of the nurturing takes place there. And, I mean, that's one reason why I think the citizens approved Measure C for early childhood development, so we could work with, you know, youngsters before they got to be, you know, third grade, fourth grade, and that sort of thing, preschool. And for African Americans, it's no different in terms of the nurturing in that household. Once again, whether it's two parent or single parent, whatever the makeup is. So I'm really interested in making sure that, I don't want to put my own prejudices on this, but I know, you know, I grew up in a two-parent household, and my parents were not easy on me. I was the oldest, and I think if they hadn't been as tough on me, you know, maybe things wouldn't have worked out for me either. And then some of it's luck, quite frankly. And I've also said between you know, the church and school and family. That's what helped shape me as an African-American male. So I'm really curious about that, you know, component.
Absolutely. I really appreciate that you mentioning that. And as you saw, that was highlighted on that particular slide. I think it was slide 14. The community connection and the importance of family is so critical. And yet, again, as I mentioned before, Western medicine, the way that you look at, for example, HIPAA, when you gain access to a person's treatment, for example, a person can say yes or no to the involvement of others. And what our outcomes are showing is the less involvement with family, the less community networking and support a person has, the less likely they'll be able to really do what and navigate well within the African-American community. That just, what you just said, it plays out, whether it's extended family, in other words. So in this model, we're hoping to have, as I mentioned before, we have an office of family engagement. We're hoping to not necessarily cajole a person into saying, give your family consent, because this is we just live in a Western model of treatment of medicine, but instead having outreach workers working with the family, perhaps, to outreach, to bring the person in to care, to actually, and again, care court is some of that. We're having some of the referrals that are made by family members, and so there, because there's a natural nexus there, but we're hoping to set up a format that a person isn't just one person, they're part of a community. The old adage, it takes a village, it truly is part of the African-American community. It doesn't exist in that way, and that's why we're looking to create a whole different paradigm for success that, again, other cultures do across the county have a very close family knit, and we'd like to replicate that for the African-American community as well.
Yes, that's very good, because, you know, full disclosure, you know, growing up, there were two streets in my community. They were all, you know, African American. The rest of the area was all white. But on my two streets that were African American, trust me, you know, it was the village. And if you messed up, somebody was gonna, you know, keep you in line. Let's put it that way.
That's right.
And not just my neighbors, but, you know, beyond that, family and relatives, they would, you know, keep you in line too. I often got, you know, my grandmother would say, go pick the switch. You want to, you know, get your, you know, your butt whipped with, or, you know, other relatives and others would keep me in line. So, you know, so I know we don't have corporal punishment these days, but trust me, I received a lot of those lickings growing up. And I do think it's important to have that strong, I mean, otherwise, you can have that discipline and have folks looking out for you from a sense of love, then, you know, you can go astray. And looking back on it, you might not understand at the time why things are happening the way they're happening, but it's all important in terms of your nurturing and your growth. So I'm really hoping that this hub will kind of begin to instill that again in our community.
That's exactly what we're hoping for sure, especially because, as you saw in the video, a cool drink of water, really something that can satiate you when you need it, but also feel refreshing and not pathologizing, open, and the opposite of, again, a community-based, because, again, we know what structural racism is, we know what the risks are, but to navigate as a person of color, and especially as a Black person of color, it is stacked against you from how you're treated, how you navigate, how you work, whether you can work in access. So yes, that community and like-minded affinity is important. So although we won't endorse the switch per se, I definitely hear the need for community-based treatment and coordination, and quite frankly, support is most definitely part of the model.
Yeah, you might not have to use the switch, but the point is, yeah, there's got to be a way of control and discipline.
Yes, I will defer to you, yes. Or the board, around this use of switches.
And I definitely raised my kids, and I don't think I spanked them more than, you know, less than five times. Yeah, and they turned out pretty well. So the other thing is, are you familiar with the invisible ache?
The Invisible Ache?
Yes.
I'm not sure in terms of the...
It's a book by Courtney Vance, and it's about African-American males and their mental health. You know, I'm in the process of finishing that book up now. I mean, it's very powerful. I would recommend it to you and your staff to read.
Thank you.
I mean, it's very, very powerful, The Invisible Ache, and it's all about African-American males and their mental health. I'm finding it, you know, I'm just finding it very powerful in terms of some reflections on my own life as I read through it. And so offering that up, The Invisible Ache. Now, in terms of the facility, so the facility will be subject, in terms of the contracting process, to our SLEB process, right, Director Gassaway? And I know, I shouldn't say this, but I really, really hope that whoever's with the progressive team, it's the African-American Wellness Hub. I just hope everything works out so that a team that's doing the hub is composed of folks that, you know, look like some of us. Yeah. Yeah, I know we got to go through procurement. It's all got to be done right, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm going to keep my fingers crossed.
Yes, within the state laws and board policies, we are doing our best. We put a lot of the information that behavioral health put out is around cultural competence. So we will be, that will be part of the evaluation process.
Yeah, because I just think have a hub constructed and built by a team that's composed of folks who look like, you know, African-Americans, I think would be very powerful in terms of that cultural competence. So just want to throw that out, but obviously, and we've got to go through an objective, lawful process.
Correct. Understood.
Okay. And then, Dr. Tribble, you said something earlier that just caught my attention. Now, it's the African-American Hub, but you're saying others will be able to receive services there?
Yes.
That's new to me.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. When I say others, I mean... My context of my conversation was others across our department receive services. We can't preclude anyone from
another race. Or,
correct.
Okay.
Correct. The modalities and the themes will be related to the African American culture.
Okay. Gotcha.
And so we can't, as you know, couldn't preclude that.
Okay.
Right. But our goal is to provide that as a hub, as we have with our other community members, our Afghan, our Latino, our Asian populations, our Chinese. So, but as with those entities, we do have other people who appreciate some kind of alignment and want to be there. So.
Okay. All right. All right, well, thanks for clarifying that. And then, let's see. For instance, I think at one of the meetings, Mr. Fab was there, and he has his thug therapy. Will that be kind of part of this? I mean, I'm just asking.
Yes.
Because different people, you know, I think there's different ways of reaching African Americans.
Yes. Yeah. The reason why I hesitate, obviously, there's procurement, and I can't speak for contracting processes. But what I will say is, we will be outreaching to the communities and the projects, including the therapy, to be a part of this program. How that eventually plays out certainly will be based on a lot of different other factors. But I want to reiterate that our hope is that it isn't just precluded or centralized on just ACBH contract providers. It can be that organization can host events. They can be a part of the hub so that the community, again, one-stop shop. So yes, we'll be outreaching to them. We hope that they feel that there's an alignment and hope that they'd be willing to partner. And either way, there's a lot of ways to define what that partnership could look like. But yes, those types of organizations as well.
And therapy will be offered at the hub too?
Yes. That came up through our listening sessions. They certainly wanted it to be holistic, but they also wanted, if the person needs help, they wanted to be able to get it.
Okay. Do you have any other questions of you at the moment? I think those answers all my questions, I believe. But if I have anything else before we conclude, I'll ask. So let's see. Before we go to speakers, do you have anything else, Supervisor Tam, before we go to the public speakers? Okay, let's go to public speakers.
I have no speakers on this item.
No speakers on this item.
Caller, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes. Margo, Julia. Unmute your microphone.
Thank you. Yes, I appreciate both Dr. Tribble and Supervisor Miley bringing up the issue of family and just how central the family is. And I want to speak to how central it is, particularly when we're dealing with serious mental illness. And what we have suggested, what we have recommended from the Care First Jail Last Task Force is that family members be part of an advisory board for the hub. And this is because serious mental illness is so mysterious. And it's also very stigmatized in the African-American community. So we think it's very important to get psychoeducation to families about serious mental illness and how to cope with it. And also to help clinicians understand what is going on the family side. Very often, people in treatment don't show all of the signs and symptoms and reactions to medication and so forth. So we think it's really important to have that family dialogue directly piped into the center. So that's just one thing I'd like to mention. Thank you.
No more speakers.
Okay. So, yeah, this is a very important undertaking, and I definitely value it, you know, obviously being an African-American. I just think this is very, very important, and having seen, you know, having been elected official here in Oakland on the city council and working in the communities and county supervisor, I've seen the trauma and the challenges in the African-American community. So I know this is not a panacea, but I know it's going to help. So if you get this operational is important, but what we're doing now prior to that, I really value that. And I think the only other question I had from my notes is the fatherhood initiative and the work that's being done, you know, working with fathers. Will that come up through public health? Will that have a role in the hub?
We hope so, yes. As I spoke, I won't speak for Director Tart, but we know that they are active, engaged, and connected with a lot of our community partners, including the elders, the Brotherhood Network, as well as those with fathers. So we would love to have that affinity. And she has stated all of her support from the beginning, and I think could certainly envision a way to be a collaborative partner in that way.
Yeah, because I think that's important. Obviously, mothers are extremely important. And growing up, my mom was the dominant figure, but my dad was there. And I think having a male role model, whether in the household or not, speaks to the importance of fathers. So I just wanted to make sure.
Yes.
Peace was something that was cognizant of the hub's efforts. Because once again, I'm not trying to impose my thinking, because I know you and Stephanie, Dr. Nobles, and all the best practices and the best thinking are on top of it all. But I'm just asking a few questions based on my own life experience.
Yes, most definitely. And again, as I mentioned, Black Men Speak is prominent within and funded currently, and we hope to provide different avenues for continued work in that way, including with fathers. So thank you.
All right, very good. Go forth and make it happen. Make it happen, Director Gassaway. Yes. And hopefully when we have the, we had the, kind of a a symbolic gathering there, but I know we'll have a groundbreaking and an opening. I sure hope we can get Supervisor, former Supervisor Carson, to attend, because this, I mean, he did a lot of work to champion this along over many, 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 many years. So
that's right. Okay. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
So let's see, do we have any public speakers on non-agendized items today?
I have no speakers for public comment.
Okay, so the Health Committee for July 14th is adjourned.
Thank you.